I'm Tom Metzger, your host for Race and Reason. Race and Reason, dedicated to freedom of speech, that small island of free speech in a sea of controlled and managed news. And with us again on the second segment is Jürgen Neumann of Samstadt, representing our white neighbors to the north in Canada, also representing Ernst Zundel, one of the most harassed free speech people on a North American continent. Jürgen, let's continue the story. When we last left, we talked about first Zundel coming to the United States, or coming to Canada, a German citizen, a pacifist basically, becoming interested in some of the what he figured were myths about World War II propaganda. He started publishing some books, putting out some tapes, just an honest inquiry, and all of a sudden the roof caved in. And when we last talked, it culminated in a large gang of Jews and others collecting in front of his house in Toronto, and you were there.
Yes, I was.
You had the windows all screened over. They were wanting to throw rocks, everything. They were saying, kill him, burn a house down, get him, all that kind of stuff. And that's where we left the last segment. Take it from there. Did you get out alive?
Yeah,
I guess you did.
We managed by the skin of our teeth. It was quite a harrowing day, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It was really something. But after a while, they did manage to finally slink away with their tails between their legs. As a matter of fact, we even heard a number of the Jewish demonstrators outside telling each other as they were leaving, let's all leave together, let's all, as if they were afraid to leave alone, as if we were going to retaliate in some way. You know, it was very interesting. But nonetheless, they went away, and nothing basically damaging was really done to our operation. So therefore, as is our style, we just carried right on. And once again, we had problems. And this became known to us on a television program that Ernst finally managed to get on. I mean, he almost never gets on these type of things.
And you'd think he'd be the most sought-after man in Canada for TV.
Yeah, exactly. You certainly do wonder. There's all kinds of other, you know, people advocating all kinds of other weird things that get on and get all this good time. And here is the man who's looking for civil rights for his own people and for free speech for Canadians and all these basic civil rights activities, and yet he can't seem to get a spot.
Well, let's explain, too, to the people that a lot of Americans don't understand that this show, we could be put in jail in Canada for producing this show.
Probably. Yes, as a matter of fact.
And number one, they wouldn't air it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nobody would dare touch it. The Zionist pressures in Canada are so great that they wouldn't dare put a thing like this on
now,
TV.
Now, a phone machine. Yeah, if you put out a message on a phone machine, like thousands or hundreds of thousands of Americans do, that criticized, say, Jews or Zionists, some Jews, or any other areas that happen to be so-called minorities,
mm-hmm.
You can be jailed, can't you?
Well, the laws as they exist in Canada at this time are what we have are known as the hate laws, which means you cannot say, basically, in practice, you cannot say anything derogatory about an identifiable non-white group.
Well, what about an identifiable white group?
No, that doesn't count.
It doesn't work that way.
Because you can say all the nasty things about Germans you want, and no problem.
So you don't have to go to Russia or the Soviet Union to find repression. You don't even have to go to West Germany, which is pretty repressive, or England, that has a lot of these same kind of laws.
Mm-hmm,
you can find it right here, and some people call it Soviet Kanukistan. Canada.
Right, oh yes.
Where freedom of speech is not really total freedom of speech.
Not by any stretch of the imagination. These hate laws, like I said, you can be arrested. Anytime you've mentioned the word Jews or blacks or anything like that, right away, you got the human, so-called human rights commissions down your neck, and you can be arrested and certainly
and
have a jail term.
The human rights commissions are composed usually of Pakistanis and Jews and other minorities, blacks. And
mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the Human Rights Commissioner for Ontario, who they appointed to that position, when he was appointed, was not even a Canadian citizen yet. And when that scandal came out, then they very quickly gave him Canadian citizenship to make it legal.
Is this because the big shots in the country, the big money makers, just don't want any social upheaval because it interferes with making money? Because you and I both know they're not really that humanitarian. The big corporate leaders in any of these countries, they try to come off as humanitarian, but they're involved in economic feudalism all over the world, so they really don't care. So it must mean that having this freedom of speech that may cause a little some people to be unhappy, does that interrupt consumerism so they don't make quite as much money? Is that the problem?
Well, I think there's really a lot to be said there. I think that, in fact, it is that they import all these different third world minority non-white groups because in them they find cheap labor.
And when my favorite subject.
Exactly, and that's the way it is in Canada, and I think that's why they want to stop anybody complaining about it. As long as they keep the cheap laborers happy, that's what they want, so they can make their money.
In other words, they realize this is a legitimate way of making a bid for power, of talking about the oppression of white people or German people or French people or whatever it may be, and they don't want their game messed with, do they?
It certainly seems to me that way.
And so the cheap labor, bring them all in. Also, it puts on the happy face to third world countries who could care less. Because as I recall, Germany under Hitler got along very well with many third world countries.
Yes, as a matter of fact, that was some of their best customers and best associations were with third world countries.
So they really didn't care what their racial views were in Germany as long as they treated them equitably and just in their country.
Right, exactly.
And the British had been robbing them blind, and French and all the rest.
Yes, that's exactly.
I guess
we're
getting maybe a little off the track, but I get on economics, one of my favorite subjects, and these phony liberals and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one of the important side effects of our work is to expose these people for the hypocrites they really are.
That's what's really good. I love it. So then what happened? They charged him with something, didn't they?
Well, what happened was, he was charged, but we didn't even know about the charge. He didn't even know he was charged at first.
What was the charge?
The charge was, believe it or not, for all you American viewers here, you're really going to get a surprise at this, spreading false news. Racial hate, not anything.
Wait a minute. Now that would put 3/4 of the news media in this country in prison right away. For spreading false news.
Not to mention half the politicians, right?
Yeah, because we sure get plenty of false news.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crazy law.
Yeah. It goes back to the 13th century from Britain, and of course because Canada was part of the British Empire until very recently, we picked up a lot of the old British laws, and it's very instructive that even in the 19th century, the British did away with that law, and yet Canada kept it.
And when's the last time they ever imposed that law?
Oh, I think it was around 1880,
Sounds like some of the judges down here in this country, they'll dig some obscure law from way back out just to get somebody who's a white nationalist or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or, for that matter, they use it on leftists, too. I mean, because anyone who opposes the system is under the gun.
And if some people think that's strange, there was a case in Germany recently where a PhD in Germany wrote a book called The Auschwitz Myth, and because he had done that, they invoked a law to revoke his PhD status. And guess who the law was signed by? Adolf Hitler himself.
I see.
And they pride themselves on being so anti-Nazi, and yet they go hypocritically to the old Nazi laws and pull this thing out and abuse it, because of course it was not intended for that purpose, but abuse it nonetheless.
Well, it's like I always say, there's only one kind of government in this world, and that's oligarchy. They're all different forms of oligarchies, and it's the few, you know, really telling the many what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're lucky, you get an oligarchy that cares about its people. If you're unlucky, you get an oligarchy that hates the people and just wants money. Anyhow, who made this charge against Ernst?
Well, we'll get into that in kind of a roundabout way where he gets onto this program. This program is called the Charrington Program, and this fellow is well known for being real nasty to his guests if he wants to. And the whole idea of getting Ernst on this program, I'm sure, was to try to denigrate him and his ideas in the eyes of the public. Of course, they didn't really realize who they were dealing with. And the other person on this program, the other guest, it was a two-way talk show, was a Jewess by the name of Sabina Citrone, who was one of the founders in Canada of the Canadian Holocaust Remembrance Association. And so they got on this show, and of course he wiped the floor with them, no problem. They were very embarrassed, and he cleaned up on them completely. As a matter of fact, I was talking to many people who had watched the show, and they said that the Jews made absolutely no sense at all through the whole thing.
And Ernst has never said that I scene that he didn't believe that any Jews died in World War II. Obviously, there were Jews that did. Mm-hmm. I know the Institute for Historical Review and these other revisionists. I don't none of them say that there weren't Jews that didn't die, but they're saying these are exaggerated figures. Does Ernst, did he bring out how 55 million people died in World War II?
Yes,
why,
he,
you know,
he
as
did.
A pacifist, I mean, that would be a strong argument. Why don't we cry for all the people that die in these phony wars?
Yes.
Because they're phony wars, yeah. You know that.
Ernst pointed out that if you really want to know about the brainwashing, just ask anybody how many Americans died in the war, how many Canadians died in the war, how many anybody else died in the war, and 9 times out of 10 they won't be able to tell you. But ask them how many Jews supposedly die in the war, and they tell you right on, 6 million. And that's right. Obviously where the brainwashing comes in.
So he mopped the floor with Miss Citrone.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of the program, Mr. Charrington said to the camera, well, folks, we'll hear more about this because we hear there's a court case coming up and you'll hear about it in the news. And that's when we pricked up our ears, a court case? And sure enough, 2 days later, down come the police with a warrant. You are now charged under this crazy false news section.
Well, that's what I call really getting the bad reviews on your show, you know. Because you win, they give you a summons.
That's for sure, but of course, that's obviously a compliment on our side anyway.
Sure. So
a
you,
backhanded one.
But knowing Ernst Zundel, he said, we're not backing down from this stuff like a lot of people do back down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people back down and make deals to get the best possible, you know, the easiest sentence they can. But he wasn't going to go for that. As far as he was concerned, he was right, and there's no stopping him. And if you let this thing go, then it'll only snowball until nobody will be able to say anything.
As Americans would say, take your best shot, right?
That's right. So this is what he figured, we were going to take our best shot. So he figured out this was going to be an expensive trial, a long trial, because, of course, you know that judicial persecution is done quite often just to try to financially break
the opposition. Even when you win, you lose in many cases.
So he figured because it's going to cost a lot of money, then he's going to get the most out of it he possibly can, and we're going to get as much publicity as we possibly can. So this is the way we went at it. And so the first time we had to go to court to set a court date for the preliminary hearing, because I'm not sure how it goes in the United States, but in Canada you have to have a preliminary hearing before a judge to see if there is, in fact, enough evidence to have
a
trial.
Yes, we do too.
Very good. So that's what we did. We went down there the first day. There was all of 4 of us. There was Ernst, myself, and 2 other associates. And we walked up there, and outside the courthouse there was 35 JDLers out there with their signs and Never Again chanting and all this kind of stuff.
The JDLers, these are the Jewish Defense League, a bunch of ignorant thugs that...
Yes, which one of our witnesses later on said actually should be called the Jewish Attack League.
That's right. Only when they outnumber you, though, are they effective.
Yes, and as we walked up to the courthouse, I must admit that I was rather nervous. You know, being outnumbered as much and them yelling and screaming and all this. But Ernst, he didn't seem to be nervous at all. As a matter of fact, he insisted that rather than walk right by them quickly and go up into the courthouse, we should walk by slowly and stop and let the media come in. And so this is what we did, and we were immediately surrounded by these JDL thugs, and we were spat at and screamed at. And
they like to spit, don't they?
Yes, they certainly
do. I found that
very
interesting, these people. They like to spit.
And then as we walked up, as we started moving towards the courthouse steps, we discovered that there were, in fact, 2 plainclothes police officers there who helped us out just a little bit. And Mr. Zundel was, in fact, knocked to the ground by one JDL thug who jumped him from behind.
That sounds familiar.
And that was never shown on the news. We had a lot of news coverage about that, but that particular part was never shown on the news. And when he got up, he said, well, you guys want to make a statement with violence, I'm going to make a statement about, you know, how you people treat us. And he raised his hand in the salute. And that certainly shook them up even more.
It's a good thing Ernst didn't get a hold of the guy. If he wanted to, he could have probably broke his back. Ernst is a big man.
Yeah, he's a pretty tough cookie, that's for sure. So we went into court, and the courtroom was so packed, we couldn't even get in. The accused couldn't even get into his own courtroom.
Show trial.
All right. So basically, we went in there, and they put it off, remanded it to another date. So we went back again, and this time Ernst said, no, this is too much. So he went out and got some more men this time, because since there was no police there, he figured, well, we're obviously going to have to protect ourselves. But the police came to him and said, we would rather you go in the back door, because then we can protect you. See, we can't protect you going up the front step, but we can protect you going in the back door. And he replied by saying, well, I don't care who you can protect. I'm innocent, and I'm not going in the back door like a criminal. And that's it. And if you can't protect us, then I'll protect myself.
Isn't that something? That's happened to me time and time again with police that have become so afraid of their superiors that they'll do things like that. It's really so dishonorable, and so it's a bad blot on the face of the police as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, it definitely is. And when we went up the second time, that was the biggest fight we had. And we literally had to fight our way into the courtroom. There was about 16 of us at that point. And we literally had to fight our way in, and they remanded it again to another time. So finally we were coming to the conclusion that it looked like it was very possible that we were being set up for some kind of an assassination attempt, and it never materialized each time because there was never really a reason for these remands.
So did they... I've seen some pictures where there was like working hard hats on people.
Oh, that came up the third time.
The third time.
Yeah. See, up to this point,
only like steel workers.
Yeah, only Ernst had wore a hard hat because being from the advertising field, he realized that if he wanted people to see him, he had to do something to point him out from the crowd. Otherwise, he's just one in the mass of crowds, so he wore this hard hat. But on the second time, after we had our heads beat in by Jewish demonstrator signs and stuff, we had decided that it'd be best if everybody wore hard hats. So the third time, the police asked again to go in the back door. We refused. And this time, they couldn't lay off this time because they thought that they were going to get a bad name, and they just had to get out there and show that the police still had this thing under control. So when we arrived there the third time, we had a large body, 35 men, with all hard hats on, and the JDL, the Jewish Defense League, just went absolutely berserk.
You spoke their language then.
That's for sure. And at that point, the police showed up in force, 75 officers.
To protect the JDL, probably. Yeah.
The interesting part of it was that when they formed the line between us and the JDL, all the police officers faced the JDL, and none of them faced us. So I think they had an idea of where all the trouble really comes from. So we went in there. Finally, we got our court date for the preliminary hearing. Somebody obviously told the JDL that they were making bad press for their own cause. And at the preliminary hearing, they didn't do any. They demonstrated one day real quiet, and that was it. We never saw them for the week of the preliminary hearing. It was decided that there would be a trial. It was set for January 1985. And so we went back to court then. And, of course, they couldn't hold themselves back again.
And at this point, didn't you start to bring the experts in? And
oh, yes, certainly. We
from all over the world, huh?
Oh, yeah. And so we had to set up for this big trial because under this charge of false news, one of the defenses is that the charge is knowingly false news. So that means you had to know it was false when you printed it. So he had to prove that he didn't know it was false when he printed it, which means that we could now bring in all these revisionist experts and all our documentation, things like that, to prove that he believed honestly that the Holocaust was in fact.
Sound like the Zionists sort of overplayed their hand on this one.
Oh, yeah, I think they really did. And I think this old Sabina Citron, who originally laid the charge, I think she's got a black eye in the Jewish community ever since.
Well, what about this article I read where there was so-called Jewish people who'd been in these prison camps, and one of them said he saw them burning and he saw the smoke coming out of the chimney, and he could tell by the color of the smoke what the man's nationality was? I saw that on clippings.
Yeah, it's just.
What was it? A Pole or a Czech? He could tell the difference of the color of the smoke.
Yes, no, actually, it was even more hair-splitting than that. He didn't say a Pole or a Czech. He said he could tell what kind of a Jew it was, whether it was a Polish Jew or a Hungarian Jew,
Orthodox or atheist.
Right. One of them had kind of pink smoke, and one of them had kind of brown smoke.
Would leave a person like that on the stand.
Yeah, they actually left him on there. Of course, after he was saying this for a while, you could see the prosecutor trying to shut him up, but it was too late by them. And the media in the courtroom was just absolutely aghast. I mean, their jaws were down to their knees, I mean, they could see. And it was the first time when we walked out of court that the media stopped Ernst and asked him if he thought that this guy was lying. Because of Zionist pressure, they couldn't don't say it. But they could quote him if he wanted to say
it. They should have asked him, was this man crazy? Lying? I think this being a little nuts might have had more to do with it.
So we did, in fact, get all these things. But it was an illegal trial, basically, because the judge, he pulled off so many illegal things that the trial had to be redone. What he did was he would not allow any books or documents in German language. He would not allow any of the... We had some models made, some scale models made right from the blueprints of the so-called gas chambers and crematoriums in Auschwitz, on Auschwitz I and Birkenau, and he wouldn't allow them to be put in as evidence so that we Ernst could explain why he thought that this was all a hoax, right? And he wouldn't allow the slides and the pictures taken by people like Professor Robert Forson, a French revisionist who has been to Auschwitz and taken photos of this place, and thereby, you know, showing exactly that the friends, what is there is not consistent with exterminationist claims.
Now, this was major, major news in Canada every day of this trial. In fact, I saw it on a satellite down here off the Canadian satellite, a lot of press on this. It was big, really big. But you know something? They cut it off here in this country. None of the major news people covered that trial in this country.
So, well, up in Canada, they figured with however much, like if you had to pay for this as spots on TV and in the news, you know, in print media and all this kind of stuff, we actually got for the revisionist cause, I would say, somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 million worth of advertising.
So they ended up shooting themselves in the foot. And how did this come, how did it end up?
How did it end up? Basically, it ended up that he was actually charged under two counts. One of them was a publication called The West War in Islam that he distributed to the Arabs asking for financial support. And he was found innocent on that because it was not distributed in Canada. And number two, he was found guilty on the other publication in question, which was the pamphlet, I suppose many people know of it, called Did 6 Million Really Die? By the British author Harwood Burrell, and which had already by that time been published, you know, it's been out for 10 years, published in 16 languages, and, you know, we're the only ones that get arrested for it.
This must have cost a fortune to defend this case. What about this great attorney, Doug Kriske? I mean, a real freedom of speech person.
Oh, he is that. We heard about him first out west when he was defending another unpopular, in quotes, cause of Canadian teacher Jim Keekstra, who had also been teaching about the validity, the possible or not validity of the Holocaust, mm-hmm. plus other Jewish involvement in negative world affairs. Mm-hmm. And when Ernst heard about this attorney defending him, he thought, oh, here, this man must be an idealist because he's putting his entire career on the line.
Yeah, because here in the United States, so many attorneys, they won't even take your case for any amount of money if it has anything to do with our side of the story.
Exactly. And but Doug Kriske, not only is he courageous enough to do it, but he's competent enough to do it. He's a real tiger. When he gets in there, boy, he really lets them know who's boss.
I hear he really took on a judge a few times.
Oh, he did that. There was nothing but arguments and scraps between the two of them. And even though he was threatened with contempt of court and many other things, that didn't deter him at all for going for the truth.
So there's still men like that around. Yeah. On the North American continent. Isn't that great?
Yeah, and I think we will find in the future that by these continuing cases and by demonstrating that there are people like this, that we will, in fact, attract more people like this.
And so he's been pushed to the wall, but he's Ernst Sundell seems to be fighting well and winning.
Yes, as a matter of fact, ever since that, he has won every legal case he's been at. We appealed the case. We won the appeal. So now there has to be a retrial, which will begin in January of 88. And we have also won, he had his passport taken away. He won that back. He had, we had a number of Jews making hate calls against us. We had two of them finally caught and arrested and convicted in court. And so now we don't have any more hate calls. So basically, we've been on a real roll of winning all the way down the line, and I'm sure we're going to win this trial as well.
That's really great. So freedom of speech is embattled. It's sort of ragged, but it's still going on up north of the border. And freedom of speech down here is still in fairly good shape. I mean, we're going out to about 55 cities now with our program. We're, it was over 4 years of telecasting. And so I think Big Brother is worried about this.
Yes, I believe that he is really worried. He himself is now becoming embattled, I believe. From the reaction that we've seen among the Canadian public, at least, there is no doubt at all that he is getting himself into big problems. We've heard of radio programs and other TV programs and things where people are on there talking about the so-called Holocaust and all this, and where none of our people or people that we know are involved. All the calls coming in are sometimes up to 80 and 90% against those people who believe in the Holocaust and for revisionist standpoint and for the freedom standpoint.
I've heard quite a bit of that on local talk shows in, like, in California. A lot of people calling in and bringing up this issue. And a lot of these talk show hosts don't want to talk about it. They make a lot of fun of it and everything else, but there's a lot of people out there doing. So that brings us up to that is the picture of Ernst Zundel. He tried to come down here just this last week to address a group of historians here in Los Angeles.
Right.
And due to Big Brother United States and Big Brother Canada, they blocked him from coming down and having his free speech.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, that's what they did.
But you slipped under the fence.
Yeah, it wasn't too easy, but we managed.
And you've done a very good job of, you're doing a very good job of representing Mr. Zundel, and I understand you work very closely with him there.
Yes, we do work very closely, and we are now getting into far wider fields as well. We're going from publications to audio tapes, now to videotapes. And it's making a very great impact on the entire Canadian community.
Now, I understand you addressed these revisionists here just the last couple of days, a few hundred of them here that were gathered in Southern California, and you passed on the word from Zundel. And what was their? How were their spirits? Was it up? Did they feel they're getting someplace and destroying a lot of these myths?
Oh yes. Their spirits are very, very high. There's no doubt about it. We had many interesting speakers there, once more bringing out more facts, more documentation, and the fact that Ernst was not allowed to come to the meeting, it certainly kind of disappointed everybody because there were many people there that really wanted to meet him. But, you know, when they see how the general picture is going and how our situation is, then everybody feels very good, and it won't be too long, I think, before we make some very, very dramatic breakthroughs. I think the enemy is fighting a holding action, you know, some noisy rear guard actions, and that's about all, and it won't be long before their entire house of cards that's left to them collapses around their ears.
So the people become more determined. The more you, at least a lot of them, the more you beat them down, the more you try to throw them in jail, the more you drag them before the courts, it makes them more determined.
That's right. People see the injustice of it all, and then when people like yourself on this program and like Ernst Zundel doing what he does and everything, set an example to show that determined, courageous people can fight for what's right and can win, it's that example that makes the other people come out and want to fight as well.
And also, I've said many times that Big Brother is relatively safe as long as he lets us have free speech. But I've told them many times, you take away my free speech and my ability to reach the people, and then we have to go to a higher court. Mm-hmm. And you know what that means.
Yeah.
So I think it's very good insurance for them to continue to allow free speech, I know, in this country.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. As Ernst Zundel says, violence is the product of an exhausted mind. And as long as they allow free speech and a room to creatively maneuver in this kind of a forum, then the minds will not exhaust and there won't be any violence. But if they try something, they could very well bring violence down upon themselves.
You've had a lot of support from other countries around the world, haven't you?
Yes, we get support from, I'd say, about 35 countries around the world now.
And a lot of these places are not all white either, are they?
No, not at all. We have support from South American countries, from Central American countries, Mexico, and of course, farther afield, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa.
So this particular part of it is not really necessarily a race issue. This affects all people that believe in justice.
Oh, absolutely. We have many. We even have many Jewish supporters on our side because they realize as well, these particular supporters, that there are very fundamental issues involved here for justice. And as we all know today, basically, I mean, the last bastion of a little bit of free speech is America, and if that goes, then, boy, it's good night for everybody.
Well, Jürgen, it's been tremendous to have you on these two segments, and I want you to take our undying appreciation back to Ernst Zundel and our hands across the border to our Canadian brothers and sisters.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here.
And a pleasure to have you on our show, and join us next time. Remember, free speech.